Tonight is Wednesday night, December 14th, or Tetvav Kislev. This is the Women's Mishnah Share, Maseches Chulin. We're focusing on some of the Gemara's comments concerning the first Mishnah.
Okay, Rabotai. Last time we read a Gemara which is trying to explain the opening phrase in the Mishnah. There are five possible resolutions. This is the first. And today we're going to see a Tosafot that deals with the broader issue that the Gemara mentions. The Gemara's question was, the opening phrase of the Mishnah read, Hakol Shochatin, and then Ushchitatan Ksheira. Everybody is qualified to slaughter, to shecht, and that generates an impression that it's lichatchila. Initially, you're allowed to submit your animal to this person without any hesitation. Ushchitatan ksheira refers to a situation of bidieved, meaning if they went ahead and did something, it's okay. But initially, there is a reason for concern that you should not go ahead and submit your animal to this particular individual. So, what exactly is the Mishnah referring to? So the first suggestion, which the Gemara suggests, there are five as I just said, is that Hakol Shochatin refers to a situation of Tamei Bechulin. Somebody who is impure touched something that made him or her impure. Went to a funeral, and they became Tomei Meis. Touched a dead animal, and they became Tomei with Tumat Nivela. Any animal that dies from anything but a kosher shechita, not only are you not allowed to eat it, but if you touch it or carry it, you become Tomei yourself for one day, until you go to the mikveh. If you are Tomei mate, it requires sprinkling of the para aduma. So we're talking about somebody who is Tomei. We are allowed to give that person, lichatchila, we're allowed to give a person that animal to shecht. Even though what might he do by touching that animal? What might he do to it? He might make it Tomei. So we'll see whether or not there is such a prohibition or not. We'll take a look at it in a second. So the Gemara asks, if it's ordinary chulin, maila meimra, why do I need a Mishnah to tell me? There is no prohibition against anyone taking something that is not endowed with sanctity, kiddushah, chulin. There's no prohibition to be metameh it. So why did I need a Mishnah to tell me I'm allowed to give a person who is Tomei an animal despite the fact that he might touch it? Answer the Gemara, it's Chulin Shina'asu al Taharat HaKodesh. What does that mean? It's ordinary food, but the person has made a pledge to him or herself, I'm going to treat it as if it had been holy. Why would I do something like that? To practice. So that when I get to Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh, and I'm going to have the meat of a korban, I want to make sure that I'm trained never to defile, to be mitameh, something that is kodesh. Or if I'm the wife of a kohen, and a kohen will be getting truma. So I want to be careful not to be mitameh the truma that my husband gets. So how do I practice that? All year, even if I don't get truma, I try to be very, very careful never to be mitameh that which I'm about to eat. Says the Gemara, that in a situation of tameh bechulin, lichatchila, you are allowed to give that person an animal to shecht. Lichatchila. Yes.
What is that phrase?
Al taharat hakodesh. It's in the Gemara itself. Let's just read the two lines that I just explained, and then we'll go right away to the Tosfos. Amar Rabbi Bar Ula, Hachi Katani. This is the way the Mishnah should be understood. Hakol Shochatin. Everybody is allowed to shech. Va'afilu Tomei Bechulin. A Tomei who is slaughtering an ordinary animal. Asked Gemara, Tomei Bechulin? Maila Memra. If you're talking about a Tomei person who is handling ordinary meat, ordinary animal, what great chidush is there in the Mishnah? What concern do I have? Who cares if he would be metameit? Who cares? Answers the Gemara, Bechulin shina'asu al taharat hakodesh. It's talking about chulin, where the family has made a pledge, we will treat our ordinary foods as if they are endowed with the status of kedusha. Ukasavar, and we are of the opinion that chulin shina'asu al taharat hakodesh ki kodesh damu. That any time you make a pledge to yourself to treat chulin like hegdesh, it is treated like hegdesh. And if it were hegdesh, then your tamei, you have to be very, very careful not to be mitameh something that is hegdesh. So if I had a korban, I would have to take unusual precautions if I was tameh not to be mitameh that animal. Because if I defiled that animal, a korban which is tameh cannot go on the mizbeach. So even though this is an ordinary chicken or an ordinary animal which can be consumed any place in the world by any person, as long as it was shechted properly, I have to be careful not to be metameit because I made a pledge. I made that pledge. I am going to observe the laws of Tumah and Tahara by my ordinary foods. So even though I have to be very careful, I am allowed to give such a person, lichatchila, I'm allowed to give him what? An animal to shech. What precaution do I have to take, as the Gemara says? Just get a little longer knife. Get a longer knife. So he doesn't come in contact. Normally, your hand will come in contact with the neck of the animal when you apply the knife, the chalaf, to the neck area which you use to shecht. So get a longer knife so then you can keep your distance. Okay, so there are the way an animal is actually shechted today. It's shackled up.
No, but I mean in those days.
In those days, I don't know. It was a cooperative animal. It stood there as you were about to be at it.
Yes. About that I
sure.
So there's the first original person.
Yes.
And you can transmit it to another person. Where does that? Because in other words, if I
so,
gave someone food, I was tummy, and I gave someone.
I'll give you excellent question. I'll just take 20 seconds to review it. There are various gradations of tumah. The highest form of tumah is a dead person. He is called avi avot hatumah, the grandfather avi avot hatumah, the grandfather of all tumot. Anything that touches an avi avot hatumah becomes an av hatumah, becomes a father, one grade, one thing less. That can be a person, that can be a utensil, that can be an edible, a food piece. An av who touches another person cannot make that person tameh. An av can make anything a rishon. Anything a rishon l'tumah. You become a rishon. But a rishon, that person who now touches, can only be mitame ochlin umashkin, food and drink.
So if they touch some food and they give it to someone who's not mitame, that person will become.
That person, which person touches the food?
The rishon
touches the food now is tame. And now someone else touches that food,
or
that person remains tahor.
Oh, okay.
Because a sheni, a sheni cannot be mitame anything except if it's truma. If the next food article happens to be truma, then we go up to a shlishi l'tuma. And if that apple, which was truma, became tameh, touches anything else, it remains tahar, unless that item which it touched was the meat of a korban. Then it becomes a revi'i, up to a revi'i. But no utensil can become tameh from a sheni. No human being can become tameh from a sheni. Only foodstuffs. So here is what happened in this case. I went to a cemetery. I came in contact with the deceased. I am an av hatoma. I can be mitame anything. So anything that I touch you, I touch my knife, I touch this, it will become tame. It will become tame. That's correct. Yeah.
Isn't water or liquids?
Yeah, there you go. Revert back to a rishon.
Yeah.
I don't want to go into that.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. It does apply today if you want to go on the Harabayit. That's it. Other than that, Tumah and Tahara status has only one practical application. Entering the Beit HaMikdash and the consumption of Truma and something like that. Why do we burn Challah? You mafrish Challah and no, we don't give it to a Kohen to eat it. Because the Kohen is Tumah. He's not allowed to eat truma while he's in a state of tuma. Ordinary foods are no problem. So we have an obligation to separate the tithe, but what do? You burn it, because he can't afford to take the opportunity to eat it. Same thing with trumot and masrot that they separate in Eretz Yisrael. Either you'll chuck it into the sea, or but you know, no one's going to eat it. No one's going to eat it. Yeah.
The minhag that of washing your hands after you go to that's just a minhag.
Out of what?
Like after
to the bathroom?
No, it's a cemetery or a funeral. There's always like a sink there or whatever.
It has no halachic significance.
Okay.
Because you accomplish nothing by washing your hands if you've gone to a cemetery. You have to be sprinkled with the ashes of the paraduma to rid oneself of the tuma. I'm not saying you shouldn't. It's
In the time of the Beit HaMikdash, there were people who were not observant, also, right? So didn't they mess didn't they mess the whole system up? Because if there's a few people who don't care about it,
so,
and they touch a dead animal, and then they start touching other, then the whole thing is
good. The Gemishne in Masechet Menachot tells us that in the Beit HaMikdash they had replicas of all of the utensils in the Mikdash.
They were real.
Why did they have replicas? Because somebody who was Tameh, who came three times a year, and he touched it, we can't use it any longer.
But how did you know?
Only if they knew. So if they knew, they would have big signs and everybody, big announcements. If you're Tameh, stay out of here. But if they found out that somebody was Tameh, someone reported, I know for a fact he's Tameh, and I saw him in the Beit HaMikdash, and he touched the Shulchan, or the menorah, they would take the menorah, chuck it, and bring in a new one.
Wow.
Yes. Yes. The Mishnah in Chagiga, excuse me, there were Shniyim and Shlishim, up to three or four different sets, because they were worried, and they used to make announcements. If you are Tameh, you're not supposed to be here at all. But there are certain portions of the Harabayit, as we know today, anybody goes on the Harabayit, certain forms of Tumah, once you go to the mikveh, you're allowed to go on the Harabayit. Only you can't go inside in various locations until you'll be sprinkling the ashes of Paraduma. In the time of the Beit HaMikdash, they had the ashes of the Paraduma. So they could have been mitaher everybody, and you can walk any place. Yeah.
There was no way to be mitaher the utensils, the menorah.
Yes, you could have. You could have, but it depends what it was made out of.
Right.
If it was made out of metal, it could.
Right.
But as the Torah says, Mizbach Adama Ta'aseli, you cannot be mitaher something that is Adama.
Right.
You can't. So Tumin Tahara played a major role in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. In fact, the Gemara's illustration about the knowledge of Torah law during Bayit Sheni, when people were really observant, not during Bayit Rishon, Bayit Sheni, was Badku Umatsu, they searched now, that every little kid, Midan Ad Be'er Sheva, from the north to the south, knew all of the laws of Hilchas Tumen Tahara. Everybody was familiar with it. Everybody. It was exactly. It was one of the most critical, practical halachot that you had to know. Today, it's basically irrelevant. Basically irrelevant. Yeah? And it's not easy. They're technical halachot, and say the taharot, if you learn the Mishnayos, are very, very difficult. Kalim, and you know, it's extremely difficult. You know, this utensil, that utensil, what, you know, it's just, it's very, very difficult. So now, I want to explore this issue about the Gemara's concern. The Gemara asked the question, why would I need a Mishnah to tell me that I'm allowed to give a person who is Tameh an animal to Shech? Why would I need a Mishnah? So what did the Gemara answer? It's talking about chulin shina asu al taharat hakodesh. It's only chulin which people have made this pledge. We're going to treat it like holy items. But before the Gemara answered, the assumption was that there are no reservations whatsoever. Guys, Tameh, a woman, a man, are Tameim, just give him the animal, let him shech. Who cares if they are Metameit? That's what Tosfot is going to address. Says Tosafot, I bracketed the little small Tosfos. Tamei bechulin mai lameimra. Va'af al gav. De asur ligrom tum'ah lechulin shebe'eretz Yisrael. Even though, says Tosafot, you are not allowed to be mitameh ordinary foods, where? In Eretz Yisrael. So if you're not allowed to be mitameh ordinary foods, why does the Gemara allow you to what? To give an animal to a tameh person to shecht. What's he going to do with the animal? He's going to touch it, and he will be mitameh it. And you're not allowed to, asks Tosafot. Answers Tosafot. Hainu dafka bepeirot. When is the only time that you are not allowed to be mitameh ordinary foods? That's by grain and fruit. Tishaychi behu truma. Because truma ultimately will come from these fruits and grains. Avo basar lo. However, meat, no. No prohibition in Eretz Yisrael to be mitameh meat. Therefore, I must resort to the fact that what type of meat was this? Shina'asu al taharat hakodesh, where the family made a pledge to treat their ordinary foods with a measure of holiness. Now let's analyze Tosfos' statement. There are two possible reasons why in Eretz Yisrael I should not be mitameh fruits and vegetables. Two possible reasons. One is based that it's an Isur of Truma. Let me explain. What is the status of a vegetable? Let's not do with vegetables, because that's not Midoraisa. Talk about things where there's an obligation on biblical law to separate the tithe of Truma. That is, either grains, or oil and wine, according to some Rishonim, and according to other Rishonim, all fruits and all grains. All fruits and all grains. That's a machlokes to Rambam and the Ramban. What is chayav in trumot and ma'asrot mida'oraisa? According to the Rambam, all fruits, all grains. According to the Ramban, it's the five grains. Wheat, barley, oats, rye, and spelt. Nothing else is chayav and trumas and maisrus. Then, according to the Ramban, you also have oil and wine. Oil and wine. According to the Rambam, you have apples and oranges, all other fruits. So now, what is the status of a fruit? Let's take a wine, for example, or a grain. What status does it have prior to me, the owner, separating the tithe of Truma? What do we call that?
Tevel.
So now I'm going to share with you one of the most famous yeshivish shechaki wrote concerning Tevel. Here is my question, and let me see how you handle it. Is a Kohen allowed to eat Tevel?
It belongs to him anyway.
It doesn't belong to him yet. I don't give Kohen Tevel. I give him Truma when I separate it.
Is anybody allowed to eat Tevel?
You and me, certainly not. My question is only, is a Kohen allowed to eat Tevel?
He's allowed to eat the regular after it's separated, and he's allowed to eat it after.
Ooh.
So if that's true, he should be able to eat it, the Tevel.
Excellent.
Right.
That's one position.
Say it again.
I'll say it what she said. That, how do we view Tevel? Why is it that I, a Yisrael, am not allowed to eat Tevel? Because there's some truma in it.
And you have the
chiv
to separate it.
Hey, I'm not talking about the chiv. I'm going to separate it. I'm not going to blow it. I only have to give 2%. I want to eat the other 98%.
If there's truma, the Kohen can eat it.
Kohen is allowed to eat truma.
But it, without the... He's tameh.
No, we're not talking about Yeti's tummy. A regular, in the time of the Mikdash. Where Kohanim had mikvaot in their houses, in their basements. You go in Yerushalayim, you go on these tours, they will show you in every single basement there was a mikvah. They had to have it in order to what? In order to eat pretty regularly. So one way conceptually of looking at the Isur of Tevel is that you and I cannot eat Tevel because of the Truma component that is found in it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why a Kohen would be permitted to eat Tevel. Because a Kohen can eat that which will be separated as Truma, and the rest can be consumed by anybody once it's been consumed because the Tevel is gone.
But is there a significance to the designation of part of the Tevel as part of it as Truma?
No. Nothing. Others say, no. Tevel is prohibited to you and me, not because of the Truma component in it. It's a separate Isur. Tevel is a Davar HaAsur. Just as non-kosher meat is a Davar HaAsur. Mita O'Raita. And as a result, not only you and I cannot eat Tevel, but a Kohen can't eat Tevel either. Is a Kohen allowed to eat non-kosher meat? Of course not.
But that's a whole different, I don't find that. Well, it's a whole different thing. One is you're doing by shefting and doing a kosher animal, you're sanctifying the whole process. The other is just separation.
Okay, but until you separate it, what is the nature of that Isur?
It's not unholy.
No, but it's prohibited.
Yeah.
It's a penalty of, if you eat.
It's prohibited because you owe that.
No, that's what you said. You're so influenced. You like what you said so much. You don't want to hear the other side of the coin. But the other side of the coin is that the reason for Tevel being a prohibited item is not because of the Truma component. It's a separate Isur. The Torah says you're not allowed to eat Tevel. There's a death penalty for anybody who eats Truma. Mita b'dei shamayim. It's not implemented by Bet Din, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take care of you and me if we eat Tevel. So that's one possible reason. So if we now look at Tevel according to Tova, tell me why I should not be mitame in Eretz Yisrael, I should not be mitame Any fruit or any grain. Why, according to Tova, should I not be metameit?
Because you don't know what
COVID
might be.
Worse yet. If I am metame, what am I being metame potentially? The truma component. Once I am metame truma, a kohen is not allowed to eat it. He can only derive one benefit from it. He must burn it and use the fire for fuel. To cook a challend, to heat the house, but he's not permitted to eat it. So the reason why I, a Yisrael, you, Yisraelim, are not permitted to be mitame fruits and grains, according to Tova, is because within that barrel of apples, with this bushel of apples, there's an apple that's going to be separated and become truma. Once someone is mitame it, the Kohen forfeits his opportunity to eat it. And that's the wrong thing to do. The Kohen, the mitzvah of a Kohen is to eat the truma, not burn it. So I should not be the cause of him burning truma. That's if Tova is correct. If Tova is not correct, which rarely happens, but if Tova is not correct, and we look at Tevel as a separate Isur, then the address lies elsewhere. Why am I not allowed to be mitameit? Because ultimately, it's going to cause financial loss to the Kohen. Why will it cause financial loss to the Kohen? Because everything in this, let's assume I'm dealing with a bushel, you know, all the wheat is touching one another, right? So that which I am mitame, I can't give to the Kohen initially as what? As truma. I can't do that. I can't. So there is hefsed mamon, financial loss to the Kohen family, by me being not very careful and being mitame all my grain. Now comes Mishnah after Mishnah, which talks about under what circumstances can you take it. It's got to be from the same season, it's got to be from the same quality. There's 60,000 rules and regulations if you want to discharge your obligation of this batch and use a different batch to cover it. We're not going there tonight. Yeah, or tomorrow either. Yeah. No.
He can't do that.
He can never feed truma to an animal.
Even if it's been
tame. Even if it's been tame, he can do one thing and one thing only. Burn it and sit next to the fire on a very cold Thursday morning tomorrow morning. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Am I allowed to ask how we paskin?
Yeah. In which case?
Is Tova right or is it a separate?
It's not a question of being right. The halacha is you're not allowed to eat tevel. This is not the type of halacha that you're going to find in Shulchan Aruch. This is quoted by achroinim who want to understand the conceptual understanding. All it says in Shulchan Aruch is you're not allowed to eat tevel. It doesn't say whether a kohen is allowed to eat tevel or not. It doesn't say that. That's the yeshiva shetayre.
We don't know exactly how.
Can I
yes.
ask another conceptual question?
Of course. I love those.
So it's like, you know, why we do everything is we're an Am Kodesh. We have to carry ourselves in a certain way, right? Like many things that we do, we have to sanctify, right?
Mm-hmm.
Marriage and eating and whatever. But being Tuma, having Tuma, it's a different kind of category. It's not really related. It's more like something negative. You were in contact with death.
Right.
Which is a not anti-life force.
Correct.
But it isn't about being Kadosh, right?
That's correct.
I'm just trying to get the feeling of where that
is. I hear what you're saying, and I once shared with you a drasha, which many great darshanim have used. It originated with Dr. Lamb. Rabbi Riskin printed it. Everybody printed it. That the origin of Tumah and Tahara is not really Kodesh and Chol, but life versus death. Every item that that is alive is by definition Tahor. Everything that is associated with the absence of life is defined as Tum'ah. We instill a value that the value of seeking life and not glorifying the dead is endowed with an element of Kedusha. In the time of biblical times and beyond, the Pasuk tells us in Parshat Ki Teitse that one of the major forms of idolatrous behavior was Doresh El Hametim. Correct. They would seek out the counsel of what? Of the deceased. And it became an art form of Avodah Zarah. By taking a bone of the deceased, putting it underneath your armpit, and somehow saying some mumble jumble and getting information on the stock market for tomorrow morning. They were looking to predict the future about and that's why it was changed to, and there is a pasuk which we'll see tonight, Vihit Kadishtem, V'hiyisem Kedoshim, in the context of a pasuk that is actually written by Tumin Tahara topics. So the pasuk itself lends itself to it, even though technically you are right. Tumin Tahara don't really address Kedusha. It's really like there is a consequence of being Tameh, that you can't enter a Makom Kadosh. And you can't consume ma'achalot kedoshim.
But even the fact that it goes to the third person, they're not associated with death.
No, but you're asking the transmit. That's a good question. I don't know. Okay. Don't know. So that's what Tosafot says. That he asked the question, you're not allowed to be metameh something in Eretz Yisrael. Answers Tosafot, that applies only to what? Fruits, and maybe grain. But it doesn't apply to meat. There are several commentators who claim that Tosfos made this up. And that there is no source anywhere in the Talmud that such a prohibition actually exists.
Which part?
That you're not allowed to be metame anything, even grains and fruit. I don't know. But there are some who say, commentators on our Gemara say, I have searched all over Shas, and I can't find a pasuk that documents Tosfos's opinion. I can't find such a thing. I will show you, go to page number 2 for a minute, that the Tur was at least aware of the practice. What you're looking at is the Tur on Hilchos Rosh Hashanah. The Tur was written by Rabbeinu Yaakov ben Asher, the son of the Rosh. If you look in Chumash, he wrote the Baal HaTurim, that commentary that is good for Shalashudas Torah, lots of gematrias and things like that, not very heavy on the Pshat, but that was written by the Baal Tur. His major contribution was writing the Tur and formatting the basis of ultimately which became the Shulchan Aruch. He divided up all of practical Jewish law into four headings, four categories. Orachayim, the laws of daily life. Yoredeya, that which is prohibited, so Shechita is in there. Evin Ho'ezer, which deals with marital relationship, the laws of marriage, divorce, Yibum and Chalitza and things like that. And Cheshen Mishpat, the laws of business. He did not concern himself with anything that is not relevant post Beit HaMikdash. So there's no Shulchan Aruch or any Tur commentary that deals with the laws of the Beit HaMikdash, nothing about Tumin Tahara. That's not was his issue. In fact, most codes only dealt with the practical stuff. The Rambam is the notable exception. The Rambam has a halacha for everything that ever existed, everything will exist. The Rambam has part of his Mishneh Torah. But the Torah does not. And he takes every single topic and quotes quite a number of other authorities. Obviously, his favorite is his pop, the Rush. But he quotes many others. And then the Shulchan Aruch decided to just take and lift out from the Torah the single opinion that he thought was the halakha. That's how Karo made the Shulchan Aruch. And usually it was two against one. Because he considered three major authorities. Rambam, Rif, and Rush. Since two of them were Sephardic, Rambam and Rif, Karo usually codes the law in accordance with Sephardic tradition. And that's why the Ramah decided I have to code Ashkenazic tradition. Because the Rush was usually left out. So here we have... Yes?
You're bringing him because he predates Tosfos?
No, he doesn't predate Tosfos. That's correct. But to claim that it was unheard of, he claims based on a Yerushalmi. So it has a very early origin, claiming a Yerushalmi. Says the Yerushalmi, I bracket it for you, it's Siman Tafresh Gimel. Yerushalmi on Rosh Hashanah. It says, Rav Chisda Mafkid L'Rav. Rav Chisda told Rav the following statement. I ata yachol lemechal kule shata bitahara echol. If you can eat all year only things that are tahor, try to do so. V'ilo, if you can't make sure that you will eat things which are tahor all year, achol shiva yamim b'sheta. 7 days a year, try to be super careful not to eat something that is tameh. That's the end of the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi doesn't say what those 7 days are. The Kosav, there's a resh missing. It should be the Rav Yah, Rabbeinu Yoel HaLevi, one of famous Ashkenazic scholars. Kibalti, I have a Kabbalah, a tradition from my teacher. Elu Haim Shiva Yamim Shebein Rosh Hashanah LeYom HaKippurim. These are the 7 days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Ad Kan. V'korei Itan Zayin Yamim. Why do I call the days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur 7 days? Every Tom, Dick, Harry, and Sam knows that there are 10 days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. What? Okay, but we eat on Rosh Hashanah. Says the Rav Yah, Lefishi b'Rosh Hashanah, Lo hayat sarich lehizaher le'echol b'tahara. Next page, 3. I don't have to warn you and caution you to do what? To eat b'tahara. Why? Shepshita sheyochal b'tahara. Of course you're going to be careful on Rosh Hashanah to eat only tahorim. Why? Shechayav adam litaher atzmo beregel. You are obligated to make sure that you are tahor for the regel. Elo nishar adayin, elo zayin yemei hachol, only the 7 weekdays of what? Between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Shehutzrach lahazhiro alehen. Where the Yerushalmi had to caution, Rav Chisda had to caution Rav to please try to eat those 7 days bitahara, if you could not eat bitahara all year. Now, this is a wild statement of the Rav Yah. Let me ask you this question, and you know the answer. Are we obligated to make aliyah l'regel on Rosh Hashanah?
No.
No, we're not. It says shalosh pamim. The Chag HaMatzot, Chag HaShivot, Chag HaSukkot. You don't have to come to Rosh Hashanah, come to Yerushalayim or Rosh Hashanah. You don't have to. Yes, it was a practice a lot of people did, but to quote this particular halakha is a little unusual when there ain't no such obligation. There is none. None whatsoever. In fact, there is a pasuk in Vayikra chapter 11, verse 8. Chapter 11, verse 8. It says as follows. It's talking about an animal that died without a kosher shechita. Or an animal that was by definition a non-kosher animal. An oink oink. A piggy. So the Torah writes, Binivlatam lo tochelu. Mibsaram lo tochelu. You're not permitted to eat their meat. If the animal died without shechita, or it's a non-kosher animal. Uvenivlatam lo tigau. Not supposed to touch it. Asks the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, what do you mean you're not supposed to touch it? Why not? Who in this world is prohibited from becoming tamei nevela? Nobody. A kohen's allowed to be metamei to a nevela. He's not allowed to be metamei to a mace. But you're allowed to be metamei to a nevela. So the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah reinterprets that phrase, uvnivlatam lo tigau. Says, that obviously can't be true. It refers to Yom Tov time. Around Yom Tov time, what should you not do? Don't touch the dead animal. Because if you touch the dead animal, you're going to become tameh. Then what are you not going to be able to do? Come up to the Har HaBayit. Once you go to the mikveh again. And that's one of the cases where Ibn Ezra demonstrated his lack of familiarity with Torah Shebaal Peh. Because Ibn Ezra writes, uvnivlatam lo tigau, you get lashes for touching a dead animal. Because it says lo tigau, it's a lav. And he forgot the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Daf Tezayin. Yeah, he never knew it, or he forgot it. He writes it's a lav, and it's not true. It's not true at all. Now, let me just finish up the tour. Because this tour is now the basis of a practice of lots of people. Lots of people. Va'alkein no hagin be'ashkenaz. It is now the custom in all of European communities. Sha'af mi she'eino nizhar mi pat shel avodat glilim. That's called pas'akum. Ba'seres yimei tshuva hu nizhar. This Yerushalmi, an interpretation of the Ravya, is the halachic basis for the practice that some people take upon certain chumrot, certain stringencies, only during the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, and are not called charlatans or frauds based on the fact that they don't do it the rest of the year. It is considered of significance to observe it only during the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, based on a pasuk which the Torah applies to Yishmael. To Yishmael. When Avraham was upset that Sarah recommended that you throw Yishmael out of the house, the Malach comes and you know, so she didn't send her with much. One pitcher of water, lechem v'chemas mayim, one loaf of bread and a pitcher of water. It's not going to last too long in the desert for the rest of your life. But the Malach comes and says, why? Ba'asher husham. Right now Yishmael was not a vildechai. He was not yet a para adam. He was not yet a troublemaker. He will become one, and all of his descendants, no doubt. But right now he's not. So right now we have to treat him the way he deserves to be treated now. And right now he doesn't deserve to die. So they apply that ideal to each and every one of us during the Aseres Yemei Tshuva. That if HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees you don't eat pasakum during the Aseres Yemei Tshuva, oh, you're a tzaddik. Even though right after Yom Kippur you're going to eat pasakum. So it's a very difficult concept. But anyhow, so although many of the commentators say, I can't find the source, the Tur says, I have found the source. It's that little story of what? Rav Chisda to Rav, who told him, you should really try to what? Eat tahor food all year. If you can't, at least during those 7 days. 7 days.
But the reason for that was so that you should be tahor on the regal.
Correct.
Which really has nothing to do with
it. No, tahor on the regal is why you have to be tahor on Rosh Hashanah. I don't have to be tahor on the next day, on Tzom Gedalia or on Shabbat Shuva. I'm not going to the Beis HaMikdash. So that's the source of it. And truth be told, it's not shocking that a lot of people didn't know, because possession of a Yerushalmi was virtually unheard of. Virtually, there were many dozens of Rishonim who never saw the Yerushalmi ever. Never saw a Yerushalmi. Never.
Why is that?
Because it was not used and copied over. If we follow the Bavli, the Babylonian Talmud, I have enough trouble writing up the whole Talmud Bavli by hand. So the Talmud Yerushalmi was not used extensively, and as a result, people never saw it. People never saw it. The Rav once said that Rav Chaim never had a Yerushalmi till he was like 50 years old. Never saw the Yerushalmi inside. So the people, he said, my grandfather never saw a Rashba. One of the classic Rishayim. They just didn't have the wealth that we have today to buy Svarim. People buy like it's water. It's a big deal. You buy a set of Rashba, you buy this. It's nice to get Svarim. But this is a potential source which takes care of the question that many asked, hey, what in the world are you talking about? There is a potential second source. A potential second source. Not only in the Yerushalmi, but in the Bavli. Go to page number 3. Page number 4. Yeah.
By the way, is that minhag about being extra careful during those days? In this community, I've never heard of it before.
That what?
You know, being extra careful.
Yeah. There are people who do things like that. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, 100%. They will not buy what's called... Today we don't have pas akum. Pas akum means bread that is made in a Gentile's house. All of our bread today is called pas... This is before today. When we all grew up, you went into any commercial bakery and bought a rye bread.
Right.
Who didn't buy rye bread?
Right.
Anybody. There was no hashgacha. Well, they didn't advertise to be kosher. But because the fact that you assumed they didn't put anything in a rye bread, that was called pas palter. Pei lamid tuf resh, which means regular commercial bread, not made in a private home. Where there are some expectations that you don't put lard in a rye bread. There's some expectation. So there were many people who, during Aseres Yemei Tshuva, only got Pas Yisrael. Only got Pas Yisrael. Today, there is no Pas Palter in Teaneck, New Jersey. Everything is Pas Yisrael. Bread that was made under the auspices of a Jewish person.
But we would only buy bread that had the OU.
That's what I'm saying. Today, every bread that we have.
Oh, so it doesn't apply. There's no Pas Yisrael.
It is Pas Yisrael. If you go into a regular bakery, that's paspalter.
It's a packaged bread. No, remember to
a bakery. Exactly. But even and if you today, if you have packaged bread, you buy with a hashgacha. But if you don't live in a neighborhood where there is such bread available, you have to buy paspalter. Fry hafas has the chavkei. It depends what role the mashgiach plays. In many places, yes, it is pas yisrael because he turns the oven on. That's all. Yeah. So let's see the Gemara that I'm referring to. Yes. It's the last two lines of the eighth perek of Masechet Brachot. This is Daf Nun Gimel Amud Bet in Masechet Brachot. Bimatnita Tana. In a Braita, we have stated the following. The Pasuk writes at the end of Parshat Kiddoshim. Vehit Kadishtem, Vehiitem Kiddoshim, Ki Kadosh Ani Hashem Elokeichem. Vehit Kadishtem, Vehiitem Kiddoshim, Ki Kadosh Ani Hashem Elokeichem. So the Braita interprets each phrase of this Pasuk. Vehit Kadishtem, Elu Mayim Rishonim. How do you sanctify yourself? By washing your hands before the meal. Vehiyitem Kiddoshim, Elu Mayim Achroinim. You sanctify yourself even further by washing your hands after the meal, what we call Mayim Achroinim, before benching. Ki Kadosh Ze Shemen. This is the practice that before Birchat HaMazon, you take oil and rub it around your hands. We'll talk about that in a minute. Ani Hashem Elokeichem Zu Bracha. This is Birchat HaMazon. So the Gemara, this Braisa, is taking a pasuk out of nowhere. The pasuk has nothing to do with what you're eating, and is telling you to sanctify yourself. There is a similar pasuk in Parshat Shmini, where the topic at least is prohibited foods. But for some reason, the person on the side says that we're quoting Vayikra Chaf, which is Parshat Kedoshim, which does not discuss prohibited foods, and that's the pasuk that we are darshaning. Now, I want to ask you a very simple question. I'm going to use as my launch pad the last phrase. Ani Hashem Elokeichem Zu Bracha. What source do you quote that you're supposed to bench? V'yachalta v'svata v'erachta. I don't need this pasuk to tell me that you have to bench. It's black and blue in the Chumash. V'yachalta v'svata u'v'erachta. So I need a drabant and grubbin finger to say that what? That Ani Hashem Elokeichem refers to Birchat HaMazon? No. Apparently, Birchat HaMazon accomplishes two things. Two things. One, it says thank you for the food. That's the regular. Ve'achalta ve'savata. You eat, you feel satiated, so you thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the experience. Then there is a second halacha. That our charge is to take that everything concerning a meal is injected with an element of Kedusha. Everything surrounding our meal reflects our commitment to Kedusha. Says this Braita, from the beginning of the meal until the end of the meal, I'm going to demonstrate the stages that will reflect the fact that there is an element of Kiddusha when you eat. And in that regard, the conclusion of the meal is not the last morsel of food that you put in your mouth, but the conclusion of a sanctified meal is that I acknowledge HaKadosh Baruch Hu's role for that particular, not just as a thanksgiving. Because I mention God and the context of His bracha in the context of trying to create an element of sanctity in relationship to the meal. Hold on one second. The same purpose, according to some, is suggested in relationship to the beginning of the pasuk as well. The beginning of the pasuk. Are we talking about holy food here? Huh. Talk about regular food. A shtickel breit. A piece of bread. Piece of bread. And what do you do when before you eat a piece of bread? You do netilat yadayim. Why? Why do I symbolically wash my hands before I eat a piece of bread? What significance does it have? What significance does it have? The answer is, you engage in an action, in a ritual, which is somehow related to what? To things that are really kadosh. And you transfer those items to what? To an ordinary meal to create an element of sanctity. An element of sanctity. So in order to see what I'm talking about, where you borrow something and put it on there, go to page number 5, and we'll see how the Rambam says, Netilat Yodayim got started. Actually, the Rambam doesn't mention it, the Raiva does. This is the Rambam in Perek Chet of Hilchot Avot HaTumah. Shlomo HaMelech uBeit Dino Gazru al kol hayodayim shiyu shniyot. Your hands are automatically a sheni latoma, whether you touch something or not. Shlomo made a decree. Our hands are tmeim, just our hands. Why are they a sheni lutuma? Based on the following experience. Kohanim used to hide their truma in the Aron HaKodesh. In the Aron Kodesh. Based on the absurd piece of logic. Zekodesh, Vizekodesh. The Sefer Torah is holy, and my truma is holy. Well, if you put the Sefer Torah in the Aron Kodesh, I'm going to store my truma there. And what happened? Mice were attracted to the Aron Kodesh and ate up not only the truma, but to make the Sefer Torah look like Swiss cheese. There were holes all over the Sefer Torah. So Shlomo said that our hands are what? Automatically a sheni latoma. What is that going to preclude? That I'm going to be alert before, what's the only thing that a sheni can be mitame? I told you that earlier. What type of food? Only truma. Only truma. A rishon can be mitame any food. But a sheni can only be mitame truma. Now, if I am mitame the truma, what will I, Kohen, not be able to do with it? Eat it. So now I have to start thinking what? What's going to happen? That if I touch the truma, and then that truma winds up touching perhaps the Sefer Torah, what might I cause? Like, as if, doesn't really happen, that I'm being mitame a Sefer Torah. But the most important thing is I have to think every single time I handle truma. I have to think, are my hands tamei or my hands tahorim? Once you had to pay special attention to truma, what did it hope it would remind the Kohanim? What would remind the Kohanim? You know what? Don't leave it in Aron Kodesh either.
Maybe they could have just said, don't leave it in the
Aron
Kodesh.
But no, they knew that that wouldn't be enough. They had to do something which would preclude them from eating it. Yeah. from eating it after they got it out of the Sefer Torah. So Shlomo HaMelech made this announcement. All of our hands are Asheni Lutoma. Shlomo HaMelech Ubeitino Gazu Al Kol HaYedayim Shiyu Shniyot Fa'afal Pi Shelo Yada Bivadai Shenitmu. Even though you don't know for a fact whether or not your hands became Tameh, but he made an assumption. Bipnei Shahayadayim Askaniyot. What does that mean? You use your hands. You maybe touch something that was Tameh. V'lo gozar Shloma alo yadayim tuma ela lekodesh. Only to what? For the purposes of korbanot. V'achar kach gozru chachamim she'acharav af litruma. Not only does this apply to meat of an animal, of a korban, but even to grain and fruits of truma. Ulefikach, and therefore, how do you get rid of this tuma of sheni, lituma, fabricated by Shlomo HaMelech? How do you get it? You wash your hands. Ulefikach tsarich netilat yadayim lituma. Therefore, you have to wash your hands for truma. Hold on a second. V'im naga betruma kodem shiito yadav. If what? If you touch the truma before you wash your hands, pisula, you disqualify that truma. V'nisrefet al tumazu, and you have to burn this truma based on this rabbinic application of truma. You take a look at the Ravid. I bracketed the Ravid on the left-hand side. Omar Avraham, va'achakein gozru alachilas chulin shitzarech netilas yadayim. The next group of rabbis said, "You know what?
May as well.
You're going to have to wash your hands anytime you eat bread."
But you're framing your meal, beginning at the end.
Exactly. Exactly. There is no halachic function in making sure that the bread I touch is tahor. Other than what? I want to create an element of sanctity for my meal. An element of sanctity. Because the pasuk is trying, because the Braisa said, v'hit kadishtem, v'hiyitem kedoshim. Be holy. One of the ways to introduce holiness is to inject an element of sanctity to our meal. Yes.
What occurred to me was that if Kedusha is about life, then maybe that whole idea is that...
No, Kedusha is not about life. I said Tahara is. Not Kedusha. Yeah. So, therefore, this whole Braisa is framing for us a concept, an ideal. So now tell me, in light of this Braisa, why should I be careful not to mitame fruits and vegetables and grain? Why should I not be mitame them? Because what will happen if you want to, if your objective is to what? To create during a meal a sense of sanctity. You can't have sanctity when you're eating what? Tameh foods. You can't. What type of foods must they be? Tehorim. Therefore, Tosafot says that at least peirot or grain it should apply to. What's difficult, if this is the case, why shouldn't it apply to meat? If this is the source, why shouldn't it apply to meat? Meat is... Now, in the time of the Talmud, and I'm going to share with you something that Rav Yoel ben Nun once said, and Rav Aaron Lichtenstein Zechon of Racha said, I fundamentally agree with you, but I can't change my father's practice. Rav Yoel argues that in today's times, we should recite Birchat HaMazon on a chicken dinner with a potato and salad. Nobody eats bread today at the beginning of a meal. That's not, in the time of the Talmud, Why? That was the bread. That was the main part of the meal. So you wash and you bench. And then if you happen to eat a piece of meat without a meal, you made a shahar kol. But in our society where you people eat fish and chicken and meat, and that is the main course, you should recite Birchat HaMazon on those, on everything that is, and that's the way he did it. He told this to Rav Aaron at Gush, and Rav Aaron said, Ekronit, fundamentally, you're 100% right. But I can't change the practice of Dor Dorot. But he made a neder, Rav Aaron did. I will begin every meal from now on with that shtickel bright. I was going to wash. Wash every meal so that when I eat my meat, I'm chayev in Berchas HaMazon, not really because of the piece of meat, which I really, a piece of bread, which I couldn't care less, but because of the meat and the chicken. But this brighta helps frame what's running through Tosafot's mind. Why should I seek ma'achalot tehorim? Because there is an element which we strive for, kiddusha, within the framework of a meal from beginning to end. We'll stop here, and I want to talk about the machloikis between Tosafot and the Rambam about mayim achroinim. Tosafot says it's not applicable today. You don't have to have mayim achroinim at the table any longer. Tosafot says that. That's correct. But the Rambam has, you have to have mayim achroinim, and we'll see why, and how the shemen comes into the picture also.